Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Darren Bunch out there in California. And it is time for another Emergency Nine. One of our favorite things to do is to dive into the golfing souls of our guests. And in this case, Darren, we have a fantastic one with us. Architect Keith Cutton joins us for his Emergency Nine.
Oh, yeah, man. We've been talking about a lot of great places with Keith already on a previous episode. We talked about the Algonquin in New Brunswick. We talked about his involvement at the Cabot courses. And now we're going to get to hear where else he's been, what else he's done, and all the good stuff that he has experienced in his golf travel life.
And you can find out everything you want to know. Well, almost everything you know. I'm sure there's some stuff he wants to keep secret. If you go to cuttengolf.com or on Twitter at cuttengolf, that's C-U-T-T-E-N. And as I said, one of the truly talented and passionate architects and just people in our game. We had a great podcast talking before. I'm looking forward to it. Keith, I know you're excited about the Emergency Nine. It has to be a highlight of your day, even though you've been working at the beautiful Algonquin Golf Course. This has to be right up there.
Definitely. Very excited.
You're so gracious to go along with me. All right, we're going to dive right in. The first question that we have is always interesting to somebody who's been to so many different places. Your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world?
Well, I'm going to have to say a destination. I'm going to say more an area. I think we were talking in the last bit there. I talked about doing an exchange over to Oxford University and doing a study. And one of the things that just as a young, budding golf architect, somebody aspiring to get into the profession, I hadn't even worked with Rod at that point. The Heathland courses just south of London really captivated me. It was the distinctive landscape there with the heather and the history, and that's something that also is a very deep passion of mine, is the history of golf architecture. One of the reasons I did a master's and a thesis and actually turning that into a book right now. The Heathland courses just blew me away. Sunningdale, Swinley Forest, St. George's Hill, Walking, Walton Heath, Camberley Heath. A lot of people talk about the golden age of golf course architecture in the United States, but true historians and golf geeks know that it didn't start there. It started over in the UK, specifically, southwest of London, in an area known as Surrey and the Heathland courses. And you had architects like Willie Park Jr. and the big one being Harry Chaplin Colt. And then his protege, one of his big proteges, Alistair McKenzie, started there with Allwoodley. And you see these courses and some of the old pictures of how rough but beautiful and natural and these courses were. It just makes you, as a golf architecture geek myself, it was just a special place.
Well, that definitely sounds like I need to add it to my bucket list, which means we should move on to question number two, which is what's the destination or course combination of the two that's at the top of your bucket list? Being somebody who's worked on the two courses, at Cabot, which is at the top of almost everybody's bucket list.
Well, funny enough, and Cabot might actually be the culprit for this, having been on the East Coast for the last 6-7 years, and my home being in Ontario, which is also on the East Coast. I've made extensive trips over to, a couple trips over to the UK. I've actually worked in North Carolina and done Pinehurst and everything else, and done Long Island, and my adventures through golf in East and mid United States is pretty solid. But the West Coast of the United States still seems to elude me. And, you know, last fall, my wife and I had twin boys, and it's still one of those, it's one of those things now where it's like, I don't know when I'm going to get there. But Cypress Point and the courses at Bandon are something that I've been, especially Cypress Point, I've been studying pictures of since I was a kid. And I've been really wanting to get out there for a while, and I'm hoping James Bryce, who's the superintendent at Cabot Links and a good friend of mine, we've thrown the idea around about maybe doing a West Coast trip this fall. So I'm hoping that comes to fruition and I can check that off.
Well, I'm hoping it does too. And I myself am an identical twin, and I can just tell you that having newborn twins, you will get there maybe in the fall 8 years from now.
That is
my fear. If you need help along the way, if you have any questions, you know where to come.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, certainly Cyprus and the West Coast, and Darren and I, you won't find bigger fans of Bandon than we are. So we're right there with you. Let's move on to our third question, which is, where's the best place you've ever stayed? Something that really jumps out at you that people might be interested in.
Well, I'll make it Canadian. So at least, you know, our American listeners hopefully will make a trip up here. I'll definitely plug the Algonquin Resort. I actually just stayed there with my family. I think I got to do that, or my owner, like my current boss is listen to this. They'll be mad if I don't. The other would be obviously Cabot, but Highlands Links at the top of Cape Breton has an unbelievable old hotel that is definitely worth staying at. And if you continue with the Stanley Thompson theme, which is in case you don't know, he is Canada's preeminent architect from the 1920s, that golden age. He built a lot of courses in the national parks here in Canada, and Highlands being one of them, but the other two being Jasper Park Lodge, which is one of my personal favorites and has a beautiful rustic lodge to stay in. And then there's Banff, which has the unbelievable Fairmont Hotel, which I've also stayed there, and that's just stunning. If I got to be the golf geek and go outside of Canada, I'll probably just be boring and say the Old Course Hotel in St. Andrews, Scotland. But
We are very familiar with Highlands Links. Mitch and I just played it on the trip not long after I saw you at the Algonquin. And we stayed at Celtic Lodge for the first time and absolutely loved it. I've been to Jasper Park. Mitch has been to Banff. We love all of those properties. And we'll point out to you, we also went and stayed at Digby Pines and played the Stanley Thompson Golf Course there and had an absolute blast on our trip as well. So if you happen to be up that way, it's definitely worth going up there and checking it out. So let's move on to question number four. What is the single best thing you've ever eaten on a trip and where?
Well, talking about other Stanley Thompson courses, I literally just got back from a family trip to PEI and played Green Gables while I was there, which is another Stanley Thompson track. It's been renovated more recently, but unbelievable property and setting in Cavendish PEI, which is, if you're familiar with the Anna Green Gables stuff, my wife was very into that while we were there, but beautiful property, and goes, the original golf course went right down into these sand dunes. Probably the best, unfortunately the golf holes are no longer there, but it's unbelievable stretch of land. And the best part about East Coast, especially PEI, is the seafood. I had lobster rolls, full, you know, 3-pound lobster, mussels, scallops, clams, and as I think I told you guys already, my grandfather being English, I grew up on, my mom was actually, her family originally was from Cape Breton, so I had a lot of fish growing up, and that's something that's in it, you know, besides steak would be my number one favorite, and the seafood in PEI was just incredible recently. So
was there is there lodging at Green Gables? I mean, it's all right there. I know the golf course. I've heard about the golf course, but
yeah, there's not lodging as far as I'm aware at the course, but there is so much because of the Cavendish community having all the Green Gables history there. There's quite a few places to stay. We had a very nice multi-room cabin that we rented to stay in that was walking distance to the golf course. So there's quite a few options. There's nothing big and over the top like a Fairmont or a Algonquin Hotel, but it's a little bit more understated, and, which is also nice.
Got it. All right, let's move on. Number five. Besides, and we kind of like to ask this because we've gotten some interesting answers. Besides the golf and the people, which are the two things that usually draw people to a golf trip, what's the most important thing to you on a trip? Is there something else that you say, well, I know I'm going to have golf and they're going to be great people, but I'd also like to?
For me, it's the history. Like I said, it's I'm also a building architecture fan or geek, and it's something that I love to explore the communities and towns that, especially in Scotland and Ireland and England, where a lot of these golf courses, the history of the course mirrors the history of the town. A lot of the evolution of things that changed over time reflect the economic and social trends and changes that occurred. And to me, that's interesting to see, to track both, to really dive into the history of an area before I get to it. And I just find it opens up, you know, it's not just a game at that point. It's more of an adventure. You're playing golf, but it's also a history lesson, and you can relate to the people better. You're understanding the foods and the style of architectures and the artwork, and it just all sort of melds together in this bigger understanding of what's going on.
Oh, that's so well put. And Mitch and I are that way too. We like to explore the little towns. I mentioned Digby. We hung out during the lobster bash in downtown Digby on our trip, and you get to learn so much more about the area. Question number six is, what's the one piece of golf apparel or equipment you can't live without?
I believe in walking for golf. I'm a big fan of not taking a golf cart and really experiencing, golf to me is a walking game. So one thing that I actually got at Cabot that's been, I don't think it's left my side in my travels since, has been my Mackenzie Walker golf bag that was actually a former rental bag at Cabot that the head pro there, Ryan, was very kind enough to sell to me for, I think it was $60 or $70. So
I'll take three.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got a tiny little Cabot logo on it, the Cabot Lynx logo, and it's the ballistic bag. It's not the leather one, but it has leather on it. But it's dark blue and the brown leather, and it just it's nice to look at, and it's also nice to throw on your shoulder and walk with. You know, you could play 36 holes, no problem. You never even feel it. So
I am on Team McKenzie as well, Keith. So
awesome.
We are kindred spirits there.
Nice.
Walking is indeed the deal. Speaking of your game, and you're so busy that I'm not sure this is a relevant question, but do you still keep a handicap? What tees do you like to play from? Is there a particular yardage you try to play from to experience a course? Or as an architect, do you like to move around and just experience a course from different perspectives?
Well, as an architect, if I'm visiting a course for the first time that to me is worth studying, I won't even play it the first time. I'll actually walk it. Mm-hmm. It may seem odd to people, but as an architect, I play one game. You know, I hit a certain length of tee shot typically, and most people do. I don't want to see the golf course for the first time through those eyes. I want to see it from every eye I could possibly think of. And that involves me walking almost like a, you know, back and forth across the fairways, trying to find everything out there that's interesting to me, whether it be a small contour, a bunker, or a waste area, or, you know, exploring all viewpoints behind, back, and sides of a green complex. I wouldn't do that if I played my own ball, because I just see it where it lands, and, you know, you're trying to keep a pace of play. So typically when I play a course, if I'm lucky enough to be there long enough, I will play it, of course, because I do love the game. My handicap right now, I haven't kept one in a bit, but it'd probably be around a 7 or an 8. I can be, you know, I can go out and shoot 72, or I can shoot 85 to 90 very easily. I just don't get to play enough. And people ask me that all the time. They say, well, you're on a golf course every day. And my reply is, yeah, but I have it torn apart. You know, that's my job. But, you know, I'm rebuilding it. So there's not a, you know, if I'm doing my job well, there's not a whole lot of golf to play. It's dirt. So, but I do enjoy traveling. My weekends are, if my family's not in town or I'm not going home, are typically spent visiting courses. So whether that be, like I said, walking them or playing them, I try to play at least once every 2 weeks or so. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it, you know, sometimes that stretches up to a month. Or, you know, with the Canadian climate here, I don't think I played for 4.5-5 months through the winter. So it sometimes some stretches can be longer, than handicap starts to creep up on me, but I can play a good game every once in a while.
All right. Well, question number 8 for us is, who is the most interesting person you've ever golfed with?
I didn't golf with him, but I would say the most interesting person I've seen watch at a very close point was, and I think this is a more entertaining answer than saying somebody else, would be on the opening day of Cabot Cliffs, getting to watch Ben Crenshaw go out there and play his own course. You know, he set the course record that day. I mean, obviously nobody else had really played it, but
I love that,
to watch him work the ball into what was not ideal conditions. You know, there was a strong wind, and it was a true Cape Breton kind of weekend that they had, and it was to hear the stories of construction, people asking questions, and just sort of being a fly on the wall for that round of golf was quite good. Once in a lifetime opportunity, for sure.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. And I know everyone listening to this, Darren and I included, wish we had that opportunity. So it's fantastic that you look at it that way. The last question before your bonus question, and that's the really important one. That's the one where you score the most points. But before we get to that one, the one golf course you wish everyone knew about.
Well, I don't know if it's under the radar, but to me it's Sand Hills. And I say that not because of how great it is in the rankings and everything, but it's because what was done there. A lot of people don't understand how influential that course has really been to golf architecture since. What Bill and Ben did there in the early 90s was, at that point, very different to everything else. If you look at what Fazio was doing at the time, you know, Shadow Creek and stuff in Vegas, you know, $45 or $50 million, whatever it's rumored to be that tab was for his work there. You know, they built Sand Hills for a minute fraction of that. You know, it was something like $2.2 million, and half of that was irrigation costs. Yes, they had an exceptional site, but that's my whole point, was the industry has now changed to architects advising more and being more economically, and the recession has helped with this as well, is really enabled the design build methodology to come to the forefront of the industry, primarily because of economic factors supporting it, like I said, with the recession, but also just because it's good for golf. If we can recommend to our clients what's economically sustainable for at all stages of the project, it just helps them in the long term with their success. If, you know, if we can build the best course for the cheapest, they have a better chance of making it, not doing something that's residentially driven or anything else. It should be golf first. And that's really what Sandhills, in my mind, did. It showed if you get the right site, the great site, and get the right people, the results are going to be exceptional. And that should sort of be the framework for every project. And it really showed sort of it brought back the rugged, natural, wide open strategies of golf architecture. And some people have taken that to extremes because it's now trendy to do that sort of look. But the people that get it still do it well. And if you look at Kirk Crenshaw's work, yes, it may all appear similar to some people, but there are variations in their work. And if you look at Rod and my work, since we've been working together, we try to vary everything to the landscape. And that to me is the biggest thing about Sandhills, is that what they did there suits that landscape so well. And that we try to do that even here with the work we're doing at the Algonquin and what we did at Cabot. You know, there's a difference in style between both those courses because the landscapes are actually very different between the links and the cliffs. And that's very important. It's not having, you know, a signature style that you're known for anymore. It's bringing your abilities to work with the landscape on each site that you're given. And I think if more people dive into that about golf architecture, they'll actually appreciate what's going on with the industry a lot more currently.
All great points. All great points. We love Nebraska. Well, at least I love Nebraska. I keep telling Mitch he needs to get out there. And I think it's amazing what Sandhills did to kind of just explode golf in the state of Nebraska. It is such a great golfing state now that most people just don't know about. The entire state, I think, flies under the radar too much. So let's move on to the bonus question. Tell us your best golf course story. What is the weirdest or coolest or craziest thing you've ever seen or done on a golf course?
Well, it's definitely my craziest thing that I've done, maybe the scariest, was...
I like it already.
Yeah, I'm trying to earn those points. like I said, when I visit a golf course for the first time, my tendency is to walk it and experience it with a blank slate, not playing. And when I was working out at Sagebrush, at the end of it, I actually visited Banff and Jasper and toured around those courses. And when I was at Jasper, it was a great day. When I pulled in the parking lot, I couldn't get in because there was bighorn sheep blocking the entrance to the parking lot. And I had to sit there for 5 to 10 minutes till I could get in. And then I get into the pro shop and it's late in the day and I sort of beg them to get out there. And they say, you know, there's only one set of golfers still going out. And if you wait, you can go out after them. You'll have the course to yourself. So I said, perfect. So I started walking. You know, I gave them some space and started just meandering slowly, and they, all of, you know, by the third or fourth hole, I'm exploring every little detail of the course, and they're pulling away from me, and I start seeing, you know, the sun starts setting, and suddenly all this nature starts coming out, and, you know, now that the golfers are gone, there's no noise, I'm seeing foxes, deer, and elk, and, you know, big birds of prey coming down, and it was just magical. I'm going through each hole, and, you know, seeing Cleopatra and all the other awesome holes there at Jasper. And I get to the, I just get off the 17th green and I'm on the 18th tee and looking at the clubhouse in the background, and Look over to the right, and there's a massive male brown bear sit, like eating grass about, I don't know, 35 yards from where I'm standing. And, you know, I got my camera out, and I'm just shaking because he's just off to the right of me off the tees and sort of between me and where I'm heading. So I just very calmly start walking, and he looks up at me and he's chomping away on the grass. And I was just so nervous. I tried to take a picture of him, and 35 feet away, and it's just completely grainy because I must have just been, you know, shaking so much from nerves that I couldn't even hold the camera properly. But luckily I got past him and got about halfway back to the hole, and he didn't stand up, but he definitely kept checking me out and started walking my direction as well behind me. And once I figured and calculated in my head that I was far enough away from him that he couldn't quite catch me, I just sprinted to the clubhouse. So I didn't really make a thorough study of the 18th green, but I don't think anybody could fault me.
What you like to call the bear hole now.
Exactly.
That is funny. I Jasper, you know, I understand that late afternoon magical experience. I watched a herd of elk cross the river there one evening when we were coming back from dinner. We had dinner in town and we're coming back, and if you want to see elk, it's one of the best golf courses I've ever been to for just the amount of elk that are everywhere you could possibly ever want to see them, on the golf course and the resort and you name it. It's such an amazing place.
I completely agree. They were literally everywhere. Like, it felt like every hole you went on, I was trying to, you almost had to push them out of the way just to get through. But, just an unbelievable experience.
Well, all great answers as expected, and you'll be happy to know that you got 10 bonus points for the bear.
Yes. Yes.
that's the best we've heard today, for sure.
Awesome.
All great stuff, Keith. And again, we really appreciate it. Hope the listeners got to really get a sense of who you are. I know I have today, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully meeting you in person at some point soon. I've already experienced the part of you that you left on both the Cabot courses. I hope I'll get to Algonquin. I know Darren's been just talking it up. And so thanks for taking the time. As I said, after a busy day, hope you've enjoyed the Emergency 9 with us. And we look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
Thanks, guys. I have enjoyed it, and definitely hope to have you out on one of our sites someday. We'll put you in a bulldozer, see what you can do.
If there's one thing I would love to do, Darren, I know you're with me on this, it's just get up there and just do that for 5 minutes. I swear, that to me would be heaven. I won't touch anything you've done. I won't go near any work you've done. Just give me a little piece of land somewhere where it won't matter if I dig it up a little, but I would love to do that. That would
who knows? You might inspire us.
That's right.
We might use that as a little contour and might become pivotal point to a hole. You don't know.
Oh boy. This is a whole new focus. You started something dangerous.
You could build the Mitch Lawrence tee box.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start dreaming now.
And honestly, a quick funny story. Rod has done this with probably every young guy he's ever had working for him. Is the first thing he does is if he's got an area on a course that, you know, he did it to Jeff Mingay, he did it to myself. If there's an area he's having mental trouble with, just figuring out what to do, if it's sort of a bland part of the site, he'll send the youngest guy with no skills on equipment over there and just tell him to, you know, work for a day, and he'll go in after and find little things that you did that you didn't probably think were anything, and turn them into key points to a green complex or something because he saw something in it. You know, that's
all right.
So you don't know. You could do it. You could do it.
I'm telling you right now, I am there. I'm going to tell my wife, see you, honey. I'll see you in 6 months.
There you go.
I'm going to follow Keith and Rod around and hope to get something. All right. Again, you can find Keith CuttinGolf.com, @CuttinGolf on Twitter, and we hope you will certainly do that. This has been a blast. As always, Darren, Thanks again for the time, man. I know I'll talk to you soon. Thanks to the listeners. Couldn't do it without you. Let me try that again. We couldn't do it without you. Hit us up on Twitter, Darren at Getaways Golf, me at Mitch Lawrence, hashtag Talking Golf Getaways, hashtag Emergency 9, hashtag Two Haggis Bags, and you will certainly get us our attention. Share us on social media with your friends. You can rate us on iTunes. That would be a great help. All we want to do is spread the word about the best in golf travel. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking the Emergency 9. Keith Cutton, all of you out there, there's a dream out there waiting for you. Run it down. Take it away, Tom Petty. So long.